Welcome to the Home Lab Show, episode 128. How you doing, Matt?
I'm doing good, man. 128. That's a great number for anyone technical, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's 128. Episode 256 is a good one.
So 640 is going to be a fun one. 1028.
Yeah, 1024.
Hey, I threw a couple extra on there for you. That was for you. How are you doing today?
We are doing great. Jay is not available today, so Matt's joining us for the podcast because I have an interesting topic that we've never covered before, and we're always looking for something new. Like, we rehash some of the old ones because there's updates to software, but input devices seems like a really interesting topic, and Matt has recently joined the Lawrence Systems team. He's the one responsible for all the cool shirts. For those of you not listening, I'm wearing one of the Cat Sit shirts.
That's an original.
That's an original one. Yeah, the OG shirts, but there's also a lot of new cool shirts and things like that. But Matt's other interests rely on some of the keyboard stuff, and it's just really interesting to me. So I titled it like Human Input Devices, but getting started with it. We're talking about why, which the why is that, you know, this is the tactile way we interact with our computers. We always thought based on Star Trek, we would just talk to computers, but I think that ship has sailed. It's not happening. It still gets a lot of things wrong. I did not say duck to my phone. So
don't listen to him, Smalexa. Yeah. Anyway, human interface devices are important. I mean, like you said, there's a certain level of tactility that we experience every day when we're working, and all that happens on our keyboards and our mice and everything that we use. I mean, we use our brains a lot for this kind of work. We're information workers, but the hands are invaluable.
Yeah.
And we want to make sure that they're in good shape.
Absolutely. So Jay is working on his Ansible video. So for those wondering what he's up to, he finished the Linux Pro course. And I don't think we had announced that the last podcast, but that's published. Go check out learnlinux.tv. You'll find a link in the description. Plus, when we go through this video or podcast today, we have a lot of links in the description for the visuals, because I had to tell Matt, he's like, oh, we get to do show and tell. I'm like, nope, this is targeted at podcast. So the show and tell is going to happen on the is in the description, so you can deep dive all the visuals later. We're just going to talk through the process and things like that. But do check out Jay's Linux professional course that is doing well. He took the time to really put together a full LPI Institute for those you want to get certified. But even if you don't want to get certified, Jay's course is good if you want to get better at Linux. He steps you through all the things you need to know to get to, I don't know a lot about Linux, to being a Linux professional like Jay is. So I'm excited because I may actually go through his course. He gave me an offer code so I can actually review it myself. He says, here, I'll give you a free ticket to my course. I was like, ooh, that's kind of cool.
I might need to ask for one of those myself. I feel like no matter how many years you work with Linux, there's always something new to learn. I think I started off with in like the late 90s with Slackware, and you know, I'm a Debian guy. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago, and there's always something new. That's awesome.
Yeah, and it's kind of cool because you know, I brought Jay into YouTube, so to speak. He was dabbling in it, and I met him, I don't know, 2016-ish. And it's funny when someone said, hey, this guy's copied your studio. I'm like, he's using my studio. I gave him keys to it. It's like, and so me and Jay have been friends ever since. Like, I was like, hey, you can just come into my studio. At the time, I wasn't really working I never worked Sundays. And Jay's like, he lived by me at the time. He lives about only half hour away. But yeah, I just gave him keys to my building. I'm like, go in there on Sunday, hit record. Here's how the lights work. And he's like, I'll figure this out. Now he's got his own studio and he's got more subscribers than me, but I'm not jealous. He's a really good teacher.
You know where it all started.
And that's where it all started. Yeah, me and Jay have talked about that a couple times, but nonetheless, I give him a shout out because he's excited. He put a lot of work into it, and I did preview it, and I didn't watch all of it yet, but it's really good. So I just want to give Jay a shout out for that.
I know we're going to talk boards today, but you just really quickly, you mentioned Ansible, and that's awesome for like deployments and provisioning. I used to use Ansible a lot when doing big pharma work for like websites and stuff, and now I want to know that one too.
And actually, it's a revision. Jay's older videos in Ansible, he's redoing all of them. So he's got an entire Ansible course, and this is the next version of it. He's just bringing it forward. I think he did it a couple of years ago, and he goes through courses because, you know, products change, there's new versions. So he redoes the same course again with the latest versions, with the latest updates to it. And he publishes a lot of his Ansible scripts and everything on his learnlinux.tv. He makes all of them available, so you can even go through his old course, and when he gives you an example, you can actually grab all of his code and build it to yourself. He's got a few big Ansible projects he's been working on, so that's why he's doing the new course. So it's pretty cool. It's definitely he's my guru for things like that right now too. He's helped me with any of the Ansible that I know. I mean, I just ping Jay and
All right. Well, yeah, let's talk about keyboards. And I'm going to start something off with a quote. There is a professor. I'm never good at reading names off of a screen. I've never heard it said out loud, but I think it's Aidy Wada. He is a Japanese computer scientist, and he has this great quote. And, you know, aside from being a computer scientist, he's known for playing a role in the creation of the happy hacking keyboard, the HHKB, that a lot of people have seen before, especially if you're technical. And I love this quote. Because keyboards are accessories to PC makers, they focus on minimizing the manufacturing costs, but that's incorrect. When America's cowboys were in the middle of a trip and their horse died, they would leave the horse there. But even if they were in the middle of a desert, they would take their saddle with them. The horse was a consumable good, but the saddle was an interface that their bodies had gotten used to. Mm. In the same vein, PCs are consumable goods, while keyboards are important interfaces. I love that quote.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, because there's a survivability of it. Of mm-hmm. I've swapped out my computers, and I'm not using the most fancy keyboard, but I've always liked a better keyboard. Not I slow down when I type on the generic ones. It just has a, you know, whatever the came in the box of your new computer was never great.
Dude, you're getting a Dell, but that keyboard, not so much. And it's something that we work with constantly, and just like the cowboys of the Wild West had their saddles, which were really what they came in contact with all the time. It's the same idea. And, you know, a cowboy saddle back in, I guess it would be like the 1800s or so, was roughly a month's salary when you looked at the costs. So that was something that was really important. And when it was built for you to be comfortable, to be something that you could sit there for many hours and ride. And it's not really that different from sitting in front of a keyboard typing all day.
No. And I will start with a little bit because there's been plenty of talk about them. I do like some of the old classic IBM keyboards. Mm. Those I think are like the ancestors to some of this modern stuff and the clicky keys that we enjoy so much today. There's nothing wrong. If you are still an enjoyer of the old school IBM, I regret giving mine to someone, and I don't know why I did. I had it for so long and I do not know where it is anymore. I feel like I said yes when someone says, can I test this and borrow it? I believe that was the last time I seen it. I don't like it a lot because they never give it back.
I'm sure many people have that. I used to have like an old Model F keyboard from IBM that I got as a hand-me-down with a IBM XT keyboard years ago, and the feel and the sound, it was like putting on a favorite pair of sneakers or something. You know, you felt good when you were working with it. And then, yeah, upgrades happen. Machines no longer support certain interfaces and things go away. But you never forget what it was like to type on that board. I mean, I've had the old school Microsoft Ergos from, like, you know, my teenage years on. And I still love working on those when they're available.
We'll skip over, jump a little ahead. I mean, there's some good companies out there that make some decent clicky keyboards, and that's fine. Spend some money, buy a box. That's fine. But we're going to go skip right over that because we already know that exists. There's plenty of keyboard reviews you can find on the YouTubes and see what you like. And I'm looking over, like, I got a Rokat or something like that. You know, it's a nice keyboard. Mm-hmm. But let's go into this a little bit more. How do we get started with the custom input devices? Because there's a couple things that really intrigue me. One of them is, you're building them yourself, so you go through this process, and we'll talk about how to get started in that. And secondly, I like when there's these extras that you add on to build levels of automation or control or programming and macros. So that's where we're going to end up, is some of there. Yeah. But where do we get started if you want to build a custom? Like, what is some of the first thoughts on this?
Oh, okay. Well, that's fun. That's like 8 episodes worth of information right there, but we're gonna condense it here. I think the first thing you want if you're building a custom board, you really want it to truly be custom. You want it to function the way that you want it to be. And I don't just mean that in the physical aspect, you know, the profile of the board, how your hand sits on it, but what happens when you click on keys? Do you have rotary encoders when you twist them? Does something very specific happen that helps you with your day? And the easiest way to make that happen is to build a board that's going to use a firmware like QMK. QMK is an open source firmware. It's available on GitHub, and a lot of boards, custom boards and mainstream boards these days run it. For instance, if you were to buy a keyboard from a company like Keychron or Fecker, there's a good chance that you've got QMK running on those. And it's just this incredibly extensible and easy to work with framework. I think it's based on like Proton C or something like that. And you can tell a keyboard to do whatever you want down to individual keystrokes. And that's where things get really fun. And of course, once you go down that road, you might as well build a fully custom board for yourself. Build a split. Build something that's going to fit the way that you type and in your typing style. Fit your posture as you're sitting at your desk, or find ways to improve it. And that's when it really gets interesting, and you have to mortgage your house for a keyboard.
So you can get these basically custom. They allow you to not only have your normal set of keys, but also extensibility in terms of like custom hold these keys, have this thing happen. That's custom macros built into the keyboard, OS independent, which I think are pretty cool too.
It is. And some of these keyboards can even do cool things like output Unicode characters natively. So there was, for example, Tom Watson at one point when he was over at, I think it was when his time at Titan HQ, had a keyboard that would have all of his macro combinations for one press. And he loved macros. So he would do like, I'm not macros, emoji. He would have macros with like 10 or 12 emoji in them. And it would be like, you know, and when you looked at it, you're like, sounds great. Gonna have lunch, talk to you later kind of stuff. Like he actually would communicate in emoji sometimes and single press on this button on his key and boom, he's gone. He goes and does his thing. And is it the most helpful thing in the world? No, but it was humorous. But also if you're sitting at a command line and you're doing work and you've got, you know, a handful of things you want to output, and you don't want like, say, a script or something on the machine, you can output from there. Just never put any secure information into it because it's going to be sitting in your keyboard's firmware, which is the default disclaimer most people give, like never, ever make a button that outputs a password for you. That's just a bad idea.
Oh, but I guarantee people are going, here's my high entropy password that's too hard to type, but I programmed it in macro and no one will know the secret combination that unlocks my password.
I've heard it done before.
Into the firmware. I just see a question. Yeah. Have you used the Vile firmware to build a board?
I have built a couple of boards using the Vile firmware. I think a Soulful was one. And I'm trying to think of what the other one was. There was definitely another board that I was playing with maybe last summer. And it's a perfectly good firmware. I just don't find any advantages in it over using QMK along with VIA if you wanted a graphical user interface for changing how your board functions. It's perfectly fine. I just, you know, if you're someone like me that owns 50 or 60 keyboards, you try to standardize your firmware. So I'll use QMK over Vile almost any day, but it is perfectly fine to use. It's actually got some nice features and great interface.
Yeah, because it's not just the keyboard. I've noticed that some of these have little displays that you can have on there as well kind of, so the keyboard, you know what settings you may have had on it or extra feedback you want to come back to the keyboard.
Yeah, you can have screens that output things like the status of your modifier keys, like your caps lock, your prints, you know, scroll lock, whatever it is that you want to have on there. You can output information like the operating system that you're working on. There's some output. Like, do you really need to know you're on a Windows machine if you're sitting in front of a Windows machine? Not so much, but it's kind of cool that you could do that. There is also the ability to output your keyboard buffer. I'm not a big fan of that one. It's not like anyone's going to be staring at the screen of your keyboard looking for you to type in your password. And if they were, it would be kind of awkward. But, you know, I don't need to know that when I hit the W button that the W appears on a screen. But that said, there's a lot of fun things you can do. There's a lot of personalization. You can create graphics for those screens. Make the board truly yours. If you're going to build a custom board, go all in, right? And that's where the screens get really interesting for me. But, you know, there's a lot of other cool stuff you can have on these custom boards. You can have rotary encoders. I like those for scrolling up and down on screens. I use them sometimes for interacting in software like Adobe Illustrator. I have a loop deck that I could use and sit here and adjust contrast and hue and everything else. But that's 6 buttons. There's tons of other stuff on that. And it's easy to make a mistake if you're not looking. But if you're working on your keyboard, you've got 1 or 2 knobs, you know exactly what they're going to do because you've programmed them, can make your job a lot easier. There are trackballs, which are kind of cool to have too. I saw someone that recently had a trackpad, like the old IBM pointing devices, on a keyboard. That was really cool to see.
Yeah, those are the little red button ones are pretty neat. The custom ones, especially because they can be another keyboard, so we can have more than one input device. Matter of fact, this system, because of the way I use it for both editing or working or recording videos, I've actually got 2 keyboards plugged in, and you can plug in multiple at a time. And to go further, several of the people, and you know, this is where it piqued my attention, the people that I work with, coworkers that have these external keyboards, and that's what they've done, is they got a couple rotary dials on it. They've programmed them to do a couple different custom things. That way, when someone comes in, I know one of the buttons is like mute this meeting and stuff like that. They got it like tied to do specific things to specific apps.
Yeah, and it's great. If you have some ideas of what you can do to make your workday a little easier and the device that's already sitting in front of you is going to enable that to happen, why not? That's the way I like to look at it. But aside from the functionality, there's the ergonomics of it all too. We sit at our desks quite a bit, and I know that posture can be an issue for a lot of people. I tend to hunch over quite a bit when I'm working, and with the right keyboard, I don't do that. My shoulders are placed nicely to my sides. I'm comfortable for the entire day, and I'm writing content for you. So it works out for everyone pretty nicely that way. And I think that sometimes that gets forgotten among all the cool bells and whistles of things is the impact it can have on you and your ability to do your job. And that's a big one, especially with IT people that incur damage throughout their careers, their hands. Tom, you have to have a story of your hand getting stuck in like a door at a data center or smashed into a cabinet or something like that, right? We all have one of those.
Yeah. Well, I do dumber things like fall off motorcycles and mess up hands. That definitely happened a couple times.
I once tried picking up a Mac G5 case that I didn't realize had like a 2x4 underneath it, and I ripped out both my thumbnails. Those kinds of things happen. You know, there have been some impalements in data centers when working on equipment. The hands, they're a little beaten up. And having a keyboard where you're minimizing things like wrist movement or how much you're moving your hand around, man, the improvement and how you feel by the end of the day using a board that's really designed for you is night and day versus something that would come out of a box.
Yeah. And let's expand a little. So first you buy the frame, and it may be a singular frame because you want a keyboard, and you can choose different angles, not just the angle as far as like the little tabs underneath that lift it, but the actual tilt of it. Those are
the tenting angles. Yeah. You're talking about. Yeah. There's tons you can do. Like, let's just say we're going to build a board. Tom, I'm going to build you a board. Actually, I'm going to build you a board. So you're going to see it in a couple of weeks. And I'm going to build a board for you called the Kyria V3. That's one that I got through Split KB. And I believe they're in the notes for today. And it's a great split board. It's got a pretty aggressive pinky stagger to it, which means that some of the columns, it's columnar layout, and it's staggered in a way that accommodates your hand. You know, anyone that's watching or listening today, put your hand out in front of you like you're going to say talk to the hand.
Yeah.
And you'll see that your fingertips are different heights. The board is adjusted for that. It makes it so much more comfortable to type on once you get a little used to how that works. And the split, you know, you can orient the board however you want on your desk. You don't have to feel kind of like constricted and constrained because the board's directly in front of you. You know, loosen up a little bit, take a little bit more of a business casual approach to the way you sit down, let the chest open up, improve your breathing, improve your posture in the process, and you're going to notice a significant difference. I will say that if you build a board like this and you start using it, you're probably going to be frustrated for the first couple of weeks because it's going to feel so different, and then it's going to click and it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, that's the split keyboards have an interesting feel to them because it's not expected. We design things because you would have never designed a split keyboard typewriter. So we've kind of followed throughout the tech history with small iterations going, it's a typewriter attached to something electronic now and so on and so forth. But these iterations never really thought till we get to like Microsoft Ergonomic or something where you start seeing a split, even though it's still physically a single board. But now you have full split, like you have two, because they don't have to be attached in any way other than electronically to get the data to where they need to go.
Yeah, there's like an umbilical cord between the two of them, and that's it when you look at it. Yeah. And there have been plenty of boards. There was the, I'm going to forget the name of the board because whenever it's time to mention it, the Meta something in like the 1970s, that was a split, but it was in a single case. It was like a unibody split. So those have been around for a long time. But yeah, the hobbyists, particularly over, I'd say, the past 6 or 7 years have just exploded. You know, you've got the Korn, you've got the Lily 58, the Soulful, countless boards that are splits that are, quite frankly, iterations of each other. If you look at them, there's like a lineage that goes on as they're improved over the years. And you end up with boards that are amazingly functional, fun to put together, which if you want to talk for a few minutes, we can talk about that. And end up being something that becomes the centerpiece of your desk, not only because they look nice and you're proud that you built it yourself and there's a bit of accomplishment there, but because it's improving almost everything that you're going to do when you sit down at your desk for the day.
Well, and kind of before we get to the assembly, let's talk about the keys. You have a couple different type of clicky keys. There's different levels of click that you have. Yeah. So what are the three main types that you'll be looking for when you're buying these?
Well, you've got your switches and you got your keys. Yeah. Your mechanical switches are going to fall into a few different categories. You're going to have the clicky ones, which are the ones that I think most people associate with a mechanical keyboard. Each, you know, click, 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 click. And not everyone likes those. There are different kinds. You've got your tactile switch, which is a little bit less aggressive with sound and has a tactile bump inside of the shaft. So when you press the key down and the switch is engaged, you feel a little bit of a pop. And that pop is fantastic because that pop is something that registers in your brain. I have pressed this button. Yeah. It is time for me to move on to the next one. That helps with speed and accuracy. And quite frankly, the keys tend to feel really nice if you get a weight that's great for your hands or your fingers rather. And then of course there's the linear switch, which is what I would consider to be the most basic. They're not clicky. They don't have a tactile bump. The shaft moves up and down very smoothly. And with the right spring underneath, you can have a great typing experience with those as well. I'm a fan of linears and I'm a fan of tactiles. the clicky switches get to me because I think high tones are just annoying at a desk after a while. You know, sometimes you get that kind of like, it's almost like a mosquito buzzing and you're like, nope, can't do it. So you find something that's a little bit nicer sounding, a little more pleasing to you. And sometimes it takes time to figure out what you like. And that's why I like to suggest people go in the middle to start, find a decent tactile switch and go from there. It's always worked pretty well.
Now, this will come into, once you've bought these parts, we know the frame you have to buy, then you have the guts that go in the frame, mm-hmm. you have the switches, then the keys go on top. There'll of course always be the debate of whether or not the keys should have any numbers on them. Even though I generally am a touch typer, there are times when I like the fact that letters are still on the keys. So I do prefer letters on the keys because I will every now and then have to reorient my brain going, my hands are completely one off and I need to look, put them back in the right place and carry on typing. But the assembly of all this is you are raw assembling all of these components.
Oh, yeah. That's one
you
of
don't
the
have to, by the way, but this is something Matt does to make it that much better. I think it's a fun journey because you've really built something yourself this way.
Yeah, it is a fun journey and there's a sense of accomplishment behind it, but there's also this beautiful quiet time that you get to reserve for yourself to do something like a board build. You know, I might sit down for 3 or 4 hours at a time and just block the rest of the world out and I'm doing repetitive tasks. So for example, when I'm building out a PCB, the first thing I'll do is lay down the diodes and you have a diode per key. So some boards you might have 60, 70, 80, depends on what you're doing. And there's this repetitive task that goes on. And I think that's amazing because it causes me to zone out on everything else that's happening during the day. And then all of the thoughts, the things that I actually care about, the things that are important to me, the things that I need to solve for the next day start coming in. And it becomes this kind of blank slate for me to address what I need to figure out for the next day while I'm doing something in front of me that's going to result in a nice tool to be able to use in the future or give to someone that needs it. So there's a lot of benefits. It's kind of like this little kind of Zen time, if you will, when I'm doing the work. And that I think is the most rewarding part, even more so than having a finished board in front of me.
I see someone says you can even make your own boards in, is it KiCad, if I'm saying that right?
Yeah, KiCad. I've used that several times to get boards together for the sake of getting fabricated overseas. Like I've taken the Lily 58, which is a really, really popular split board, and made a couple of minor modifications to it, moved the rotary encoders out a little bit so I could use larger knobs and have a more comfortable board. And do all that in KiCad and then export into Gerber file and send it off to a company like JLC or Elcro and get your boards in like 2 weeks, which is pretty sweet.
That's something that once you start digging into this a little bit, you'll find there's a lot of resources. This isn't, you might see, and like I said, we definitely left a lot of eye candy in the descriptions here of all the different boards that have been built, but it's not that outlandish now. It's not like you have to be a custom fabricator and have access to an amazing array of tools. There's a lot of online resources, and we left links for a lot of them to kind of point you in the direction to get you started on these things. It allows you a lot of leeway because, like someone had said here, you can design it yourself in KiCad and KiCad for those who wonder how that's spelled. And then, like you said, customize it, get it printed, get it fabbed. 2 weeks later, you've got the frame. Then you start soldering, and now you build your custom keyboard. This even has me thinking a little bit about that custom keyboard idea where I use DaVinci Resolve for video editing. I'm like, I bet there's already, because it's such an incredibly popular editor, they have their own dedicated keyboards, but I could probably just get a control pad that would have the same things. I just need some cut and scroll back and forth in a timeline and cut buttons. That's really what the speed editor does. It's got a little spinny wheel to let you trim things out faster.
And we can build you one of those. I've got a bunch of PCBs for a numpad called the Dumpad, and it's got 16 buttons, a screen, and a rotary encoder. And we can set that up to become a device for you. In fact, we should do that. Gosh, I like building.
Yeah, that is actually almost more interesting than the keyboard part is the fact that the custom things I do, I've got most of the muscle memory of what keys to hit to. I couldn't tell you what they are. It's muscle memory. I know where the buttons are. I know what I have to press when I'm editing because you spend a lot of time editing as a YouTuber. It's the dark, dirty secret is it's not just about recording videos. Someone has to process those, and very technical videos are hard to outsource to third parties. So because I'm self-auditing, and so I spent a lot of time doing that. So this could also be a shortcut. But to the same extent, if you are doing a administrative task, especially if you're a Linux admin, you've got sequences you type or frameworks, you can program all this into those same keyboards and say, boom, kick me out this type of framework. Or if you're doing web development, a lot of CSS, you can have a lot of common CSS stuff in there. There's a lot of little things you can keep going down the rabbit hole and tweaking and really customizing your interface experience. And
I think you can look at a keyboard the way that you're describing it is a tool for automation. It's all these things that I can do manually that I just don't want to. And I can save time if I press two buttons versus, you know, 10 lines of something being outputted on my own. That makes a big difference over time. It really, really does. It's, you know what you're doing? You're Supermaning, you Superman 3'd yourself in a positive way. You're getting little tiny increments of time back for yourself.
I like the reference.
I know. I feel like the spirit of Richard Pryor is like, they got it. They finally got it right there. That was perfect. I love that. But yeah, there's plenty. And one resource that we didn't put in the notes for today is the Keyboard Builder's Digest. And that's a great place to go. I'll add that into the notes. It's kbd.news. And you're going to see articles written about new boards that are coming out, builders releasing revisions for their boards, specials, deals, you name it. There's even a vendor directory there, which you can look at to figure out where you want to get parts. Should this be something that you look into, something that you want to pursue? And we also left some notes in the for today's episode to some of the shops that I like to purchase from. And I think those are important because building your first keyboard can be a very expensive thing if you don't know where to go and find the right things. And I made sure that we had some people in there, like, for example, World Spawn. Is this guy, Matt, and he helped, he didn't help, he did it. He fabricated the board for MSP GeekCon last year for us. He's in that list. There's also Ewan, who's a great guy that I buy boards from probably every month. He probably expects an order from me every month. He doesn't hear from me kind of a thing. It's probably a problem. And there are some other shops in the list that will provide you with full kits to assemble. So you don't have to go hunt down every component that you would need to build a board. You can have everything placed right in front of you. If you have a soldering iron and the willingness to learn and some time, you can build yourself a pretty sweet board.
Yeah. And if you spend a few minutes searching around on YouTube, you find there's plenty of custom board builders. Matt has got a few videos and he'll definitely be having more in the future. So there's a lot of content around it. And it kind of intersects with I see people talking about 3D printing things, and that's a big piece of it. There's plenty of pre-done stuff you can 3D print to integrate into your design and keyboard. This is a really fun, for building input. I think this is really right up the home labber's alley because it's this extra level of customization. We talked about building your rack. We talked about the servers you put in the rack, the software you may run on the different servers. But eventually, there is an interaction you have to have with all these. And I thought this was an interesting topic for today.
And we could always expand on it. It's like I'm very easy to find. The room behind me, I have 3 FDM printers, a resin printer, and a laser in there. We can have some fun. We can build some stuff. Maybe what we can do is build a board and have the audience kind of dictate where things go with it. Could you imagine that? Polls? What kind of board are we going to do? What color are we going to do? What is it going to be? All right, well, here's the Frankenstein that you guys asked for. That could be fun. You know what? And then that becomes a giveaway to someone. Someone gets the Frankenstein.
Yeah, maybe we'll do some of that in the future. That'll be down the road on the channel stuff. Yeah. But this is fun. I think we've covered all the topics. Did we nail them all? We can in a podcast. I mean, we're itching to show you visuals, but that's why we left links down below.
I think we grazed the surface on this really nicely. And as time goes on, I definitely want to bring some more board and small electronics hobbyist topics in here. It's what I love to do. And I forgot podcast, but if you can see this, there's just stuff all over the place. Now.
Anyone watching the live version of this, you can see that he's in a room properly set up for a builder.
It's a room in which you can either get electrocuted or hurt really easily. What it is. There's a 55 gallon aquarium and 2 shelves of electronic equipment right above it.
Yeah.
That's just wrong.
But it makes it cool. You can watch some fish. You can solder.
Get everything done in here. The only thing I don't have is like a soft serve ice cream machine in this room. If so, no one would ever see me again. There's plenty about the boards. Like I said, I'm going to be building some for you because I do have a project pile of about 30 different custom boards that I just haven't built, things that I've gotten through trades and gifts from people. And I think it'd be fun for me to start putting them together and putting them into your hands to see what you think about them.
Yeah. And I I'm all in on the, I'm positive there's already someone, we don't have to invent what the best shortcuts for DaVinci are. They are out there. Someone's done this. Someone's already built a custom thing on there. So that might be an interesting project. But as always, we love hearing from all of you. Leave some comments and all that stuff down below. If you're watching this on YouTube, feedback at thehomelab.show. I forgot to throw that up at the bottom there. That is definitely how you can reach out and let us know what you thought of this episode or any others, or reach us for other ideas and all that fun stuff. But thanks everyone for joining, and thanks Matt for It was really an introduction. I know we could talk for hours about keywords. We'll call this an introduction.
Oh, this was like 30 minutes out of an 8-hour course that we're going to do. I just decided that.
Yeah,
that was not discussed. Anyway.
fun stuff. Oh, sorry about the time. I seen people saying the notice went out. Yes. I AM and PM. I don't know why, but when I set these up in StreamYard, that happens sometimes. So it's not happened in a while. I haven't goofed up in a while, but I missed it. So
hey, you got to keep things interesting.
Got to keep things interesting. We'll work on more automation so that doesn't happen. All right. Later, everyone. Take care.
Have a good one, folks.